This is The Guardian.
Today, is Angela Rayner in serious trouble?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Okay, so my name's Helen Pidd.
I'm out and about in Stockport in Greater Manchester, where Labour's deputy leader grew up.
I think she's great. I think she's really inspirational. Obviously, she's a local woman as well, so we're all dead proud of her in Stockport.
Angela Rayner has been in the news a lot of late, after senior Conservatives started to ask questions about her domestic arrangements and her tax affairs.
It's gone on now, it's lingered on. It's up to her now to really come clean.
It all centres around the profit she made selling her old council house in Stockport back in 2015, just before she became a Labour MP. Should she have paid tax on it? Was she really living there at the time? Has she even committed electoral fraud? The police are now investigating, and today Angela Rayner may well come under fire in Parliament as she stands in for Keir Starmer at Prime Minister's Questions. But outside Westminster, does anyone even care?
It looks like it's only about 1,500 quid anyway, which in comparison to the absolutely astronomical, awful things the Tories have been doing, really, really shady behaviour from them. I just cannot even understand how they're going after it. I think it's an absolute witch hunt.
It's just distraction tactics. Even if the lady in question is found bang to rights, I think there's bigger fish to fry than that.
Angela Rayner is being picked on by a whole lot of bullies who ought to know better, but seemingly don't.
I also think it's about her being a working class woman, I really do. I think it's about, you've got ideas above your station, how dare you try and stand up to us?
From The Guardian, I'm Helen Pidd. Today in Focus, could a row over a council house bring down Angela Rayner? Gabby Hinsliff, you're a columnist for The Guardian, formerly political editor of The Observer. You've been following the controversy around Angela Rayner's domestic arrangements in recent weeks. Who started all of this?
It's been a very kind of long-running, rather slow burn story, which started back in February when Lord Ashcroft, the former Tory deputy chairman and treasurer, lately taken to writing a string of political books and biographies, published a biography of Angela Rayner, which was the first to kind of raise this question of where she was actually living before she got elected.
Hypocrite Rayner's £48,000 profit on a council house sale. That's the front page of today's Mail on Sunday.
Then the Mail on Sunday particularly and the Times have pursued the story following on from the publication of the biography in February.
Angela Rayner council house scandal is rumbling on, despite her repeated denials that she's not done anything wrong or owes any unpaid taxes.
And let's have a closer look at those front pages, starting with the Daily Mail, which leads with the story about Rayner, who says, I'll quit if I'm guilty. I mean, surely she knows.
Can you tell us what this is actually about?
Angela Rayner originally bought her council house in Stockport on Vicarage Road before she met her husband, Mark Rayner, who had a house about a mile away on Lowndes Lane. And in 2015, the year she got elected, Rayner sold her old house for more than she bought it for. And the question then becomes, should she have paid capital gains tax? when she sold the house on the £48,000 profit that she made. In other words, should Mark Rayner's house have counted as her main residence and Vicarage Road as a second home, which would potentially have attracted tax?
Okay, so it's essentially an argument around where Angela Rayner was actually living when she sold her ex-council house. And that matters because if she wasn't living there, it was essentially a second home, and then she should have paid capital gains tax, and that's the tax on the profit. So what did she have to say when the allegations first emerged?
Rayner says, actually, Vicarage Road was her primary residence. That's where she was on the electoral roll. She says, obviously, she also spent time at her husband's house with their children, and he did at hers. And essentially, she's saying she was living between the two houses. This was a blended family living in fairly difficult circumstances. She already had an older son from a previous relationship, but during this period, she also had a son with Mark, who was born prematurely with special needs. She's going back and forth to the hospital. You know, there were times when she barely knew which way was up, you know, which house her clothes were in, all this. But that account has been questioned by some of the neighbours who have told the papers that she was actually living at her husband's house with her kids, and her brother Darren was the one actually living in Vicarage Road.
Greater Manchester Police releasing quite a short statement that reads, we're investigating whether any offences have been committed. This follows a reassessment of the information provided to us by Mr Daly. Mr Daly, of course, being James Daly, the Conservative Party deputy chair.
So James Daly is the MP for Bury North who triggered a police investigation by essentially reporting these chain of events to them. And that's been, to some extent, controversial because Mr. Daly has seemed unable to specify exactly what it is that he's accusing Angela Rayner of doing.
What is it you think she's done? If the police had originally said they didn't think there was anything to actually respond to, what is it that you've brought to light that has changed that?
The situation is that information was provided to Greater Manchester Police as per any other person making a complaint or a potential complaint. Greater Manchester Police have assessed that. They are now carrying out an investigation, and I think that we should allow them to carry out that investigation.
But I still don't understand. What's the offence that you think that's been committed?
And what exactly are the police investigating her for?
Well, there are now a number of potential offences in the frame. She might have breached electoral law by registering herself at Vicarage Road if she wasn't really living there. But, you know, there is a limit, a strict time limit on prosecutions. Too much time would seem to have elapsed for prosecution on that. The police can also investigate the tax matters, but it would be more usual for information to be passed to HMSC, especially if it looks like it wasn't deliberate tax avoidance, but that it was done in error. And then there are potential questions. If her brother Darren was living at the house in Vicarage Road and so was she, you know, was she claiming single person's council tax discount? Should she have been? You know, was he paying rent? Is there something there that she should have declared? But all of these feel like not necessarily criminal matters, some of them. It feels almost as if this police investigation is taking place more to reassure the public that everything is being done that could be done and that everything is above board than because there's necessarily a likelihood of something going to the CPS at the end of it.
And Vicarage Road in Stockport, I actually live in Stockport and I'm nosy enough that I decided to go and have a look at it the other week. There were lots of reporters outside it. It's, you know, we're not talking a mansion. It's a two up, two down, semi-detached council house. In terms of the capital gains tax that she could potentially have owed, are we talking a lot of money?
We're talking relatively small potatoes. It all depends on a range of factors that we're not entirely clear on, but potentially somewhere between £1,500 and £3,500. You know, and everybody should pay every penny of their taxes, obviously. But by comparison to, say, the former Tory Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi, who had to repay several million pounds to HMRC in a dispute over his taxes, you know, it's not a huge amount. I think it's become almost less about the money than it is a question of honesty. You know, is she being entirely straight with everyone about where she lived at what time? And has she become sort of too defensive in the face of questioning?
And what has Rayner herself said about this police investigation?
She said she's done nothing wrong and that basically she awaits the findings of the police investigation. And if she is found to have committed a criminal offence, then she would resign. The main problem has been that although Angela Rayner says she's taken independent tax and legal advice, which says she's done nothing wrong, she hasn't published that advice.
I will give information over to the necessary authorities because I'm very clear
public.
I've not done... Well, the voting public, what I'm saying, and it can be clear, is I've done nothing wrong.
The Labour Party hasn't given any further details about what that advice might involve. And Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves have both said that they haven't actually seen the advice, but that officials in Keir Starmer's office have done and that therefore, you know, there's no case to answer.
She's not broken any rules. She's, in fact, taken legal and tax advice, which has satisfied her and us and me.
For me, that is probably when your journalistic antennae go up. Sometimes, and I would stress sometimes, that could be a formula of words you use to insulate the leader from any blame if it turns out that the advice is wrong or that the advice is not quite as advertised. Oh, well, I didn't actually see it myself. So there's a sense that we're not quite getting the full story, although, of course, there could be several reasons for that. One of those reasons could be that this is a quite personal, intimate stuff. It's about how they lived as a family. It's about a marriage that is now over. You can see why she might be reluctant to go into enormous detail about it. And that, I think, has been one of the reasons that there's been more sympathy for Angela Rayner over this than there might be for your average politician caught up in a dispute about their taxes.
I have been very clear on my advice that I've received.
Publish it then. Why not publish it?
Because I don't need to publish all of my details. My child's birth certificate was put out in the public domain and it's not fair on my family.
This is someone whose path into politics has arguably been a bit messier than your typical old Etonian. She's not one of those career politicians who has organised her entire life thinking, how's this going to look to the Daily Mail in 10 years' time? You know, that makes her potentially an easier target to pick on. And this is poking into something that's clearly uncomfortable territory for her, quite personal territory for her.
Charlotte Edwards, you've been spending quite a lot of time with Angela Rayner of late, and you did a big interview with her for the Guardian Saturday magazine. Tell me about meeting her. Where did the meeting take place?
So I met her in Westminster in Portcullis House. She was immediately very welcoming, very warm, very energetic, and her office was just like a sort of treasure trove of visual delight, glittering cushions and mad number of shoes along the carpet and, you know, all the busts of famous historical figures. There was one with a karaoke mic on, someone else had a sort of bit of tinsel on. It was part walk-in wardrobe, part sixth form common room. She sits directly opposite you and she talks directly to you. But when I talked to her about her background, she swiveled slightly and she sort of concentrated quite a lot when she was talking, and she wasn't looking directly at me when she did that. So there was a change. When she was talking about politics, she faced me.
Can you tell us a bit about what it was like for Angela Rayner growing up in Stockport?
So she was born on the Bridge Hall estate in Stockport, and she was the second of three children. Her mother, Lynn, had bipolar disorder. She was one of 12 and never went to school, and that's why she couldn't read or write. And her father, I think the relationship was not great. She remembers her father as being quite angry. From what she said, I think that was very difficult for the kids. She did talk about hiding from him when he came home and trying to be very quiet so as not to ignite his temper. And then he would leave again, and he would leave for stretches, and Angela was left dealing with her sibling, her younger sister specifically. They didn't have hot water, so they would walk 2 miles to her grandmother's house, her father's mother's house, and they would have a Sunday bath. She said she was hungry all the time, and she would try and go to her friends' houses for Sunday lunch. And then from 10, she had to look after her mother, who was pretty much in bed the whole time, as well as take her sister to school and ensure everything was functioning in the house. I think it was a lot of responsibility. I think it was really hard.
It was around this age that Angela Rayner began caring for her mum. was really depressed and suicidal. When I was in a very dark place, she used to bath me, look after me, feed me. If it weren't for her, I don't think I'd be here today.
I remember being scared. I remember staying at the bottom of my mum's bed once, thinking, is my mum going to do something? And not wanting to go to sleep because I didn't want to go to sleep and think that my mum wouldn't be there in the morning.
You know, I've also experienced being in a family where there was a very big mental health issue, and that sort of level of chaos that mental health brings, that feeling that there's a sort of exploded bomb in that house. It's a very difficult thing to deal with, and it does set you apart from other people. People talk about her being working class all the time, but she's from a family that fell through the cracks.
So obviously she had a really tough childhood, borderline destitute. How did she find her way out of such poverty?
So to begin with, she described herself as feral. She said she was going out to nightclubs at the age of 14. By 15, she was out all hours drinking cider, riding the buses. She said she was sort of fueled by a real fury with her mother. Just the fact that her mother couldn't get up, why wasn't she like other mothers? But she recognises today that her mother's condition was so debilitating that there was nothing she could do. She had a boyfriend. She was very, very keen to say that this was her first boyfriend, partly because of the kind of thing that is said about her in Westminster, you know, some of the Tory attacks have sort of, you know, very rude about the fact that she had a baby at 16 and she was a single mother at 16.
And how did that change her life?
It changed her life because it suddenly gave her a future. She suddenly thought, here's something that's mine, here's something I'm going to take care of, this is going to be what my future is. Mm-hmm. She lived, I think, for a while with the baby's father, but that relationship didn't work out. She worked washing pots and then overnights in palliative care. She went back to school in the evenings. She did an NVQ in social care. She learned British Sign Language. She did a qualification in counselling and volunteered with the Samaritans.
All while she's a teenager.
She was 18.
Yeah. Looking after her son.
It's kind of extraordinary. And she worked in the care sector, and that's what introduced her to the trade union Unison.
Do you think, in terms of her being a Labour politician, would you say that she's like a living, breathing example of what Labour policies can do for a person?
That's definitely how she feels. She felt Sure Start was something that totally transformed her life. It wasn't until she arrived in Sure Start and was surrounded by other mothers and people who could give her advice about parenting that she realised how important really small things were, like eye contact and talking to her child and reading to her child. And she suddenly gained all this knowledge and the important stuff of parenting that she had been lacking in her own background, and she's really grateful for that.
It's an absolute honour conference to be back here today. I remember being a Unison young member in this very hall attending my first ever conference. I had no idea what...
You mentioned her joining Unison as a care worker, and that was her path into politics.
I became who I am today with the thanks of this union. Because I wasn't born into the movement, I was made in it.
And then in 2015, she was elected to the safe seat of Ashton-under-Lyne.
It is for the people of Ashton-under-Lyne that are at the start, the heart and the end of my maiden speech. It is to them I owe this tremendous honour and privilege.
It wasn't too long, was it, before the party realised that her backstory could be a real asset for them. First Jeremy Corbyn and then Starmer. Can you tell me about her rise through the ranks of the Labour Party?
Well, one of the reasons why she rose so fast is because a lot of MPs wouldn't serve in Corbyn's cabinet. And her view is you need to represent the people.
Hi, I'm Angela Rayner and I'm Labour's Shadow Education Secretary. We've had an amazing week at conference.
So within a year, she was on the front bench. And obviously, she is very dynamic and she's hard to miss. But she herself also says, I don't want to be the victim. I don't want to have a sort of poor Ange narrative. But I think it's important to say her background is her politics. That's why she's here. And so it's difficult not to mention her politics. Mm-hmm. It's not trying to turn her into a victim. It's trying to say, this is why it's important to her. She is representing people who would not otherwise be represented in government.
Conference, and I've heard some rumours that we'll be watering down our New Deal for working people. Be in no doubt, not with Keir and I at the helm. We will ban zero-hour contracts, end fire and rehire, and give workers rights from day one.
Coming up, why are the Tories so obsessed with Angela Rayner?
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Gabby, why do you think the Tories are gunning so hard for Angela Rayner?
I think there's two reasons. I think it's partly to do with trying to drive a wedge between her and Keir Starmer. So, you know, their relationship, it's not necessarily always smooth. There's not a huge amount of trust there. She is someone who finds it very difficult to trust people. I think she's sensitive. She feels slights acutely. She is quite vulnerable underneath that very kind of confident exterior. He can be quite remote, quite hard to read. They are chalk and cheese personally. I think the other reason that she's become a target is because of the way she came into politics. You know, we know she had this very chaotic, very dysfunctional childhood. She's someone who's had to, she's talked about learning from scratch how to be a parent, how to run a home, how to do all those things. There are going to be loose threads hanging. I think that's the suspicion for the Tories, that, you know, maybe if they prod and poke enough at Angela Rayner, something's going to come loose.
And is there an argument that we should be holding politicians to higher standards than the rest of us mere mortals, particularly those who are so high up in a political party?
I think accountability is really important. And I think if a politician has done something wrong, if a politician has failed to tell the truth, if a politician has failed to abide by not only the laws of the land, but, you know, the expectations that we have of people who hold high office, then they should be accountable for that. No one is saying that Angela Rayner should just be let off because we feel sympathetic towards her, or because we feel she's been unfairly picked on, or because we feel she's had a hard time in life. You know, if she's done something wrong, she needs to face the music for that.
And what about, you know, if you think about the way that Angela Rayner has talked about and to Tories over the years, you could say that she had it coming. She was asking for it.
I think it's partly a function of being deputy leader that, you know, you're the person who's rolled out when there's a scandal. You're the person who's rolled out to say so and so should resign, whoever it is, you know. And so therefore, there's an awful lot of Angela Rayner calling for people to resign or be suspended or generally be fired, whatever, down the years.
This allegation's very serious for the Prime Minister. It's a very simple question. Was she there or not? And if he was there, then his position's untenable.
Now it emerged, actually, that that's not true and that there was a HMRC investigation and that he's had to pay penalties for that. I think that makes his position untenable.
He managed to rack up 24 formal complaints from his own civil servants. So can he say today, will he walk before he's pushed?
And I think there's probably a great deal of pleasure on the Tory benches at seeing her in trouble for once.
Mm-hmm. But also the language that she's used about Tories, that has hurt some of them, hasn't it? And they've remembered.
She's had to apologise for saying Tory scum, and she does use livelier and more visceral language than some people in the Labour Party about Tory politicians.
You cannot get any worse than a bunch of scum, homophobic, racist, misogynistic...
Go on, Andrew!
But I think also, you know, she's a very strong campaigner for the Labour Party. She touches a base and reaches people that Starmer doesn't. She's very emotionally engaging. She's a natural with people.
I've seen firsthand the difference that makes, and so has Keir. We grew up in different ends of the country and at different times. Not too different. But we endured the same insecurities and hardship that so many working people face. I guess the one difference is, though, I had to endure it as a ginger. So I've got one up there.
All of those things, you know, are qualities that the Labour front beach needs. In some ways, you know, she brings a touch of humanity, she brings life, she brings colour, she brings spark to an operation that doesn't necessarily always have those things, that can come across as a bit cautious and a bit, you know, dry. She's been sort of somewhat off radar for the last few weeks, and I think that's been because every time she puts her head above the parapet, she's going to get asked about this. And just taking her out of action for the duration of the local election campaigns, that in itself would be, you know, a win for the Conservative Party, never mind making any charges stick.
Does it not also carry an element of risk targeting Angela Rayner? As you say, she is pretty popular with the electorate. I saw some polling from Public First, which said has increasingly found voters talking positively and unprompted about her. Maybe Tory party members don't like her, but perhaps your man and woman on the street does. So is it not a risk for the Tory party going after her like that?
There's an element of risk in part because they've been accused of snobbery, they've been accused of misogyny, they've been accused of going after a soft target, someone who's popular. But on the other hand, if you're a political party, if you can bring down someone who is popular, well-liked and important to that party's mission, function and presentation during an election campaign, if you could bring down that person, you would want to. Is it going to anger lots of Labour voters you like Angela Rayner? Well, yes, of course it is, but it's not about them. It's about galvanising what's left of the Tory base and doing some damage to your opponents.
And given that we've had months and months of Tory sleaze, people getting locked in rooms by bad men, tractor porn, allegations of fraud, do you think that the Tories' own scandals will really fatally undermine what they're trying to do to Angela Rayner?
I think there are two big things stopping this achieving what the Tories wanted to achieve. One is that, I mean, as you say, the sort of Tory scandals just keep coming and they are so much more lurid and dramatic. The other is that I honestly think, I mean, if you look at the polls, while this story has been rumbling away, it's been on the front page of a lot of right-wing Sunday papers, you know, it could not have got more exposure if they'd paid for it. And yet it's doing nothing. You know, the polls are, if anything, carrying on heading downwards for the Conservatives. You know, nothing is rescuing them. And I think they have genuinely reached that point where the Labour front bench could be organising the slaughter of your firstborn, or all turn out to have, you know, second and third homes in the Caribbean that they haven't paid any tax on. And people would just be like, yeah, whatever, I'm fed up with this government. We're a long way beyond the point where whether or not Angela Rayner should have paid some capital gains tax on the sale of an old council house sort of 9 years ago is capable of shifting the dynamic, I would say.
Gabby, thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for today. You can read Gabby's column on Angela Rayner's woes on theguardian.com, along with Charlotte's excellent profile from The Guardian's Saturday magazine. Today's episode was produced by Sammy Kent and George McDonough. It was presented by me, Helen Pidd. The executive producer was Homa Khalili. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.